So the National Youth Council have released this information today that 7 in 10 young people are considering emigration for a better quality of life than in Ireland. More than the representative body, I should say, the National Youth Council is for voluntary youth organisations in Ireland. And they're expressing obvious concern, as I'm sure many people are, at this news or at these stats. Paul Gordon is the Director of Policy and Advocacy with the National Youth Council of Ireland. Hello to you today, Paul.
Good afternoon, Ciara. Thanks very much for having me.
Well, thank you for joining me. So I can imagine why you're expressing concern, obviously showing the impact of the cost of living crisis it's having on every single person, but a lot of people who are younger facing into a future in this country, they probably feel like they won't be able to have one that they want at the moment.
That's right. So I suppose we undertook this survey with Red Sea to better understand the impact the cost of living is having on young people. And I think what's coming through loud and clear is that it really is having a very significant impact on young people aged 18 to 24. Many are struggling to make ends meet, and a large proportion of young people are considering Ireland for a better quality of life elsewhere, as you mentioned at the top of the show. The findings are really quite shocking in that respect. 3 in 4 young people believe they would have a better quality of life outside of Ireland, and 7 in 10 are actually considering moving abroad so they can get just that. And we're very concerned by these findings, which do send a strong message that there's real fear from young people about what the future holds for them. We heard a lot of personal testimony through the survey. Many are saying they're struggling to save. They're facing high accommodation costs and rental costs. Some are not socialising with friends because of the need to ration their money. And many said they and their friends are seriously considering moving elsewhere for a better quality of living.
Just about the socialising part of it. Obviously, 2.5 years of a COVID-19 pandemic, that stopped people from socialising majorly. And, you know, looking into that again, you can actually understand why people would be making those decisions, especially just on the simple basis of having a good quality lifestyle, not just about jobs and affording petrol, etc.
Yeah, so I mean, we've heard from students, for example, who, you know, they have so many costs, be it registration fees, textbooks, and for many, they just can't have the same life experiences that others who can afford it might. And that is concerning, obviously, people going to university and people in their early 20s. And they do thrive, I suppose, in terms of socialising, and that they can't do so as a result of the cost of living, and that happened previously with COVID is really challenging. And it shows that the cost of living is hitting young people in different ways to the rest of the population. So we saw that half of the respondents to our survey reported worse mental health over the past 6 months when they were asked about the cost of living, and more than 2 in 5 said they're not as happy as they were 6 months ago.
So if we zoom in on the more than 4 in 10 saying that they're not as happy as they were 6 months ago, is mm-hmm. that direct impact of the cost of living crisis, one can assume?
Yes, that's in the context of the cost of living.
Right. And then really, in reality, you could probably say, no matter what your age group is, in a lot of these questions, they probably would be similar, maybe even higher figures in terms of those not happy with their mental health, happy with their lifestyle, happy with their housing experience, all things that have been highlighted in that 18 to 24 age group from these stats.
Yeah, so they're. I mean, in terms of mental health in particular, there's a significantly higher number reporting worse mental health in the past 6 months among that 18 to 24 age group compared to the general population. The general population is around 1 in 3. So that is a big concern. And I suppose we are hearing as well that 4 in 5 young people surveyed said they're fearful for the future. And I think that really captures how intrusive the cost of living is for young people. It's not just hitting them in the pocket, it's affecting their day-to-day lives. And we do, as you say, have to remember that the pandemic had a really significant impact on young people. They felt job losses the most heavily. They saw education severely impacted, and they also saw dramatic increases in depression. So experiencing inflation for the first time in their lives shortly after a pandemic is really bound to have affected young people.
So if we look over the coming week and a half, we will be hearing our 2 weeks of Budget 2023, and yourselves at NYCI have a pre-budget submission. What exactly are you calling on the government to do?
So we're calling for significant investment from government in young people in Budget 23 because we believe they need to demonstrate to young people that there is a future here for them, that they are going to be supported by government. And what we're looking for is supports that are tailored to the young people because we feel they've been overlooked in a lot of the conversations about the cost of living so far. So we're calling for a reduction of €1,000 in registration fees for those in higher education and an end to those charges for apprentices. We're asking for the minimum wage for those under 20 to be raised to the same level as those aged 20 and over. Currently, some under 20s are subject to rates as low as €7.35 an hour. The rate of job seekers for those seeking work under 25 is also lower than that for those over 25. We want that raised. There was a very positive measure in last year's budget. It was the introduction of the Young Adult Travel Card for 19 to 23-year-olds, and we're asking for that to be extended to more young people. And finally, we're calling for increased investment in youth work organisations of €12 million, and our members provide youth work up and down the country, and what they're seeing is an increase in deprivation among young people as a result of the cost of living, and we really need to support those programmes so they can get the people who need it most.
And Paul, what can that €12 million do?
It can really support programmes on the ground. A lot of people, a lot of our members are struggling with the cost of living. They're facing higher overheads. They often provide food and snacks for young people. They provide, I suppose, what we call non-formal education for many people who might have fallen out of formal education. They're also taking on additional over 12,000 young Ukrainians are coming into services around the country. So we're really asking for support for those organisations that are delivering work in communities right across the country. They serve close to 380,000 young people through various forms of youth work programmes. So we're really looking for greater support in the budget for them.
And the extension of the Young Adult Travel Card, when currently it's 19 to 23, do you just mean then the extension from 18 to 24 instead?
That's what we'd like to see in the budget this year. Okay. I think one of the main findings of the survey is, as I mentioned, young people are experiencing the cost of living differently, and some of their highest costs are around education charges. So that will be the contribution charges, but also public transport, as they're probably more likely to use public transport than the older population. So that is a support that really is much needed for them.
If we go through some of these testimonies, Clara Jane Hickey here, she's aged 21 from County Waterford. She moved from Ireland to the Netherlands last month to study at the University of Groningen, I believe is how you pronounce it. She said, in quotes, "I left Ireland due to the cost of living there in the Netherlands. I pay lower third level tuition fees per year compared with Ireland, where I or my parents would need to be able to afford a mandatory contribution of approximately €3,000. That is per academic year. Finding accommodation has been much more realistic for me in the Netherlands," she said. And she also finds the public transport system much better. Something we've spoken many times on the continent, their transport system is a lot better publicly than here in Ireland. And if we look at Aisling Maloney, she's aged 19 from Roscrea down in Tip, and she's returning to college at UCD in the autumn. She has received a scholarship to study. And she says, "Since I'm from a low socioeconomic background, I tend to struggle with the rising cost of living. I'm lucky in that I've secured accommodation for next year on campus, but I'm worried about the cost of food, textbooks, and also about missing out on life opportunities that other young people might have and might take for granted." If we look at something basic there, Paul, in terms of textbooks, that's obviously essential when you are studying, no matter what level it may be. That is something that's so expensive the higher you go up, I guess, in your grading.
Absolutely, and it really is a huge cost and has been for a long time for young people, both in secondary education and in higher and further education. And it really is something that I suppose is not considered generally when someone takes a college place, that they will have a huge huge costs around textbook into the hundreds of euros, and often, you know, some of these textbooks aren't available secondhand, so it's the new textbooks which are a lot more expensive. So these are kind of some of the hidden costs that are really piling up for young people, especially those who don't have the disposable income. I know Aisling there, you mentioned, was taking shifts on the weekends last year to support with her education, and some of this really is just scratching the surface in terms of the challenges we're hearing from young people. You know, we heard from one young person who's pregnant, living in overcrowded rental accommodation because she simply couldn't afford to stay elsewhere and doesn't feel supported to find alternative education. And a lot of this is why we're calling for young voices to be heard in this year's budget. And we really want the government to listen. They do have an opportunity, I think, to keep young people in Ireland and to make them feel supported this year. And that's what we'd really like to see.
Okay, budget 2023, a lot is riding on it. The 27th of September, Tuesday, we will hear more about it then. And that is, of course, Paul Gordon. He is of the National Council, or the National Youth Council, I should say, of Ireland, the Director of Policy and Advocacy there. And just to mention before we leave this topic, 3 in 4 young job seekers, they're receiving a rate of €117.70 per week. That's compared to €208 for their family and friends aged over 25. Paul touched on it. That's one of the things the council is calling for in terms of what the government can do. Make sure that those that are under the age of 25 are receiving the same minimum wage or job seekers. And it's a 43% difference, 117 compared to €208. Near €100 can make a big dent in a lot of people's lives. But thank you for that, Paul. So after the 2.5, it's just hitting 2.5 years of this pandemic, believe it or not, in September. And News Talk Online, they carried out a survey that was between the 29th of August and the 5th of September this year. They had 515 respondents, and almost half of those, the workers, are still commuting 5 days a week to work, despite obviously the massive changes that did take place during and since the pandemic was declared. I'm now joined by Dr. Brian Caulfield. We've spoken to Brian many times before about, you know, our road infrastructures and about, I guess, commuting probably a couple of times. Also, Brian, of course, you're Associate Professor at the Department of Civil, Structural and Environmental Engineering at Trinity College Dublin. How are you this afternoon?
I'm very good, and yourself?
I am grand, thank you. Just to start with yourself, are you also commuting near every day, or has your changes over COVID, have some of them stuck with you?
Well, we've just started back, like all of the other universities, I think, in the city. Trinity opened its doors today for our undergraduate and postgraduate students. I'll be in there tomorrow, meeting third years and then teaching later on in the week. But today I work from home, just because it was more efficient for me to do that. But I think you mentioned at the start, that's one of the things that we're still seeing. We're still seeing quite a high percentage of people working from home and avoiding that commute.
Yeah, and, you know, especially if you live here in County Kildare, you can know how annoying that commute is. You know, I can get into the city centre from where I live sometimes. Now, this is just like normal-ish traffic, not heavy, obviously, in around 35 minutes. There's times I have had to wake up, you know, 2.5 hours before I have to be somewhere, leaving with 2 hours just to make sure I'm definitely there on time. Like, it's really unsustainable and has been for many people's lifestyle over the years. And the one benefit, I guess, from the pandemic being declared was the fact that people had more flexible lifestyles. But this survey has shown that 50% of those 515 people are still commuting to work every day. And if you look around, you know, your local area, your friends, your family, a lot of people are driving every single day.
Yeah, a lot of people have started to go back into the office. And I suppose, like, you know, in the sample that News Talk collected, you might expect that there will be a certain percentage that are working from home. It's not conducive to everybody to work from home. And some of the research that we've done at Trinity has kind of shown that there are particular sectors that are more used to working from home. But then there are a number of sectors that never stop going into the office and never stop going onto campuses, et cetera, to work. So that kind of commuting is still there. The one thing I would say is, yes, our car numbers have gone up, but so too have our public transport numbers. They've fully rebounded, as far as I can see, back to where they were in 2019. And our buses, I know the bus that I get into Trinity is as busy as it was back in 2019. The Lewis is the same. So public transport is as busy as it was before the pandemic.
So they've rebounded, but not increased. Is that right?
In terms of the numbers, I'm not sure if they've increased, but they're definitely up at the levels that they would have been prior to the pandemic.
Okay. 22% of those commutes, though, of those half of people who still do it every day, have gotten longer compared to 9% who say their journey is now shorter. Why would 22% say longer? Do we have any idea?
It could be due to the congestion that you mentioned just there. I think my gut feeling, having not well really seen the data, but kind of linking it to other research that we've done in Trinity, is that a lot of people have moved out of the big cities, and they moved out of Dublin and Cork and Galway, and they're further away, and they're travelling further to get to work, maybe two or three times a week. So that perhaps is one of the reasons. I'd say the other reason, and I suppose the elephant in the room, is that the cost of renting and buying in a city like Dublin is so high that our people are now being pushed even further past the commuter belt to travel. So it wasn't a big surprise to see that increase in commute time.
Okay, very interesting. Thank you for joining me this afternoon. That is Dr. Brian Caulfield. He's Associate Professor at the School of Engineering at Trinity College Dublin. As he said, he isn't surprised that some of the commuting times are now longer. As we know, that commuter belt has continued to widen over the years, especially with some people relocating during the COVID-19 pandemic, maybe getting closer to home and now commuting again. And even if they're doing so for less days of the week, even just one day of the week, those commutes obviously are longer. 29% of people say they travel into work fewer days now, though, with most of those visiting the workplace 3 days a week. Flexibility is something we've seen in surveys since the pandemic again was declared, that people are saying that they want to see flexibility within their job or when they're looking for new jobs, as it's important in terms of lifestyle. I guess a lot of us have realised that there are more important things in life than commuting every day, spending all that money on petrol and sitting in your car or the public transport system, whatever it may be. Now, Kildare Readers Festival is happening again this month. Believe it or not, Amy Quigley is Executive Librarian with Kildare's Library Service. Thank you for taking the time today, Amy.
Thanks for having me on, Ciara.
So the dates for this year's Readers Festival, please.
Yes, so our festival week is from the 3rd to the 9th of October, but we have one event that we always have in September, the 24th of September. We usually have a walk around Naas for Denis O'Driscoll to celebrate Denis O'Driscoll's poetry. This year, however, we're moving it to Macaulay Place for tea, treats and a talk on a particular poem of Denis O'Driscoll's with poet Enda Wiley. So that should be a great event on that day.
And just let us know what exactly the Readers' Festival is and how it's beneficial to us who live in Kildare.
Well, the Readers' Festival is a literary festival that is devised and hosted by your library service. So a number of library staff are involved in the committee, and we put this together every year. I suppose the big difference for us between us and other literary festivals is you're getting to see great, really interesting, quality, well-known authors completely for free, whereas you would often pay for that in other counties or in other places with other literary festivals. We take it very seriously in trying to provide a range of different types of authors, a range of playwrights and poets that, you know, hopefully that we're touching on something that everyone will be interested in. And we invite all of our members and all of the public to come along to our events in the libraries and in the riverbank at the final weekend of the festival.
Yeah, so first, as you said, event is the 24th of September. That is in Macaulay Place. But if we go to the week itself from Monday the 3rd, what is happening at Newbridge Library?
Yeah, well, I'm really looking forward to the event in Newbridge Library. So we have a wonderful writer, Suad Aldara. She wrote a memoir this year, I Don't Want to Talk About Home, which is a really powerful memoir, reframing the Syrian migrant experience and what it is to rebuild your life out of the rubble. And she's going to be talking with Mia Gallagher about this debut memoir. Suad is living and working in Ireland, and I'm really looking forward to that one myself. It's going to be a great event, and that's at 7 o'clock on the 3rd of October in Newbridge Library.
Yeah, if we move to the next day, the Tuesday, the 4th of October, Naas Library, there is a screenwriting event happening. So something a little bit different.
That's it, there is. So the only thing I can say about the festival this year is we tightened it up to a week instead of 2 weeks. And there's actually just too many events on each day that I want to go to all of them. So the event on in Naas Library is with author Wayne Byrne. He'll be talking with novelist Lindsay J. Sedgwick. So Lindsay has written books on screenwriting before. Wayne writes prolifically on film, and he's actually one of our librarians in Naas Library as well. That event is booking very, very fast. So if anyone's really interested in it, Wayne writes really, his books on film are fantastic. He's very well known for them. That one is going to sell out quite quickly, I would say. So if you're interested, I would definitely book that as soon as possible. On the Tuesday as well, if you can't get to Naas Library, if you're further down the county, we have a fantastic storytelling event for adults only with Andreas Bastak, who is Ireland's original musical storyteller. That will be on in a Thai library at the same time. There's just almost too many things going on at once.
Because there's also in Selbridge Library on the same evening. And it's a good day, if I have to say it myself, Amy, the 4th of October. I may have been born on that day, but no deal. But anyway, I know there's in Selbridge Library an evening with Etna Shortall in conversation at, did I say Selbridge? I did, Selbridge Library,
did,
and that is at 8. If we look elsewhere later in the week, Ed O'Loughlin in conversation with Miriam Mulcahy, that's happening at Kildare Town Library the 5th, the Wednesday.
On the 5th at 8 o'clock, Ed is an Irish-Canadian with links to Monaster Evan. He was long-listed for the Man Booker Prize, and he has also this year written a memoir, The Last Good Funeral of the Year. So he's going to be interviewed by Miriam Mulcahy. That will be a fantastic event in Kildare Town. And on that night as well, as I said, we tightened it up to make it easier for staff to get around to, you know, to get to all the events, but to work the events. But Adele Coffey will also be in conversation with Rachel English that night in Maynooth Library. Sure to be another great event. Adele Coffey's debut novel, Breaking Point, came out at the start of the year and has gotten rave reviews and is a great book club favourite. So that's also on. And we also that night have our one online event with Yang Ji, who wrote the award-winning Strange Beasts of China. So that's going to be, we have a Kildare Libraries online book club at the moment, and we have invited her along to talk to the book club that night. And you don't have to be a member of the book club, and you don't have to have read the book to come along. We did an event similar to this for Ireland Reads with Emma Donoghue earlier this year. So if you are, have an interest in attending, you don't need to actually be part of the book club to go to that one. So it's a jam-packed schedule.
It is. And one more thing I just want to mention before you go, Amy, is on the Saturday, which is the 8th of October at 10 a.m, nice and early. What else would you want to be learning about at 10 a.m? But the 10 banned books you should read.
Yes. So this, the 10 books is one of our staples every year. It's very, very popular. People love to find out what the books people are recommending are. And this year we thought we'd do it with a little bit of a twist. So this year we're going for 10 banned books you should read. We are very lucky. John Kelleher, the previous, the former director of film classification, who also is responsible for banning books, if we were to ban books. John Kelleher will be attending along with, as she calls herself, self-declared dirty-minded historian and host of the Censored podcast, which is a fantastic podcast I recommend, Dr. Aoife Branock, and they are going to be picking their top picks from the world of banned books. So that would be a great one. I suspect that will be booked out quite soon as well.
Yeah, that sounds really, really interesting. Thank you, Amy, for joining me. Of course, Amy is with Kildare Library Service. She's executive librarian there, and always has great time for us here at KFM. We appreciate it. All of those events are just some, I should say, that are happening over that week from the 3rd to the 9th of October. And if you want to attend any of them, you can book online on kildarecoco.ie's website, and of course find out all the information there also. The Taste of Kildare is back. It's going to be happening between the 24th and 25th of this month, September. I'm joined now by the Chief Executive of Into Kildare, that is Áine Mangan. How are you today?
I'm great, Ciara. Thanks for having us on.
Well, thank you for joining us. This is going to be happening where, Áine?
It's happening at the Curragh. We're delighted to work with the Curragh alongside their Autumn Racing Festival, which is on the 24th, the Gosmillions, and the 25th, the Friends of Kildare. And big race as well. So it's going to be a great weekend with racing and food all in one.
And back to in-person, I guess. There's going to be live cookery demos. There's food tasting experiences, which I think if you ask the majority of humans, they are totally always up for a food tasting experience. Who doesn't love food?
Well, I certainly am anyway, which is obvious. But yes, I am. We're delighted to have it back in person. A couple of years ago, we had it at the K Club, which was a great success. And we hope to build on that this year with over 40 food trucks and suppliers attending. We've got the Ledger restaurant, which is a special 8-course tasting menu as well. There's some limited number of tickets available for that still. And then we also have Rachel Allen, who's a good friend of Kildare and has assisted most years with us as well. One of my directors, Brian Fallon, has been instrumental in making this happen. So we're really looking, that's from Fallon's of Kilcullen and Fallon and Byrne. So we're really looking forward to everybody coming out to support the event and to try different samples of food from around the county.
Yeah, so if we go into some of the chefs, restaurants, food producers, etc., you did mention, of course, Fallon's of Kilcullen and also Fallon and Byrne. But we're also potentially going to be tasting the likes of the Kildare House Hotel produce, Hearts of Kildare, Fire Castle, the Alchie Bean Gastro Bar over in Athy, the Clannard Court also over in Athy. Then there's going to be food trucks and mobile food outlets, Ginger's Event Catering, Saba, Kildare, Nolan's of Kilcullen, and the Osprey food truck, just to name a few.
That's a few of them, yes. And then in the Ledger Suite, we've the different hotels, the Fairmont Carton House, the K Club, Hearts, Two Cooks, Glen Royal, Barbersand Castle and Killishy Hotel taking part as well.
So early bird tickets are on sale currently, Áine.
They are indeed.
€15 per person.
Yes, that's right. And children up to 18, I'm sure it's free. And then it's all the information is on tasteofkildare.ie.
And also with that €15, that's entry into the Curragh races. And then tickets for the Ledger tasting experience that Áine just touched on. A limited number are available. So it's 8 courses, not 7, is it?
It's 8, yeah. There's a lot of additional goodies included in it and beverages as well. And that's a real tasting experience, and that is $175 per person. There is a limited number left, but certainly there is a few still.
I mean, Kildare really does have a great name for itself in terms of our foods.
Oh, definitely. I think we're a real foodie destination, and we're very lucky to have a number of Michelin star restaurants in the county as well. And great hotels to stay in to match that. So, it's great to have everybody out meeting up again, to have so many chefs working together. We just had a briefing recently with all the chefs on the event, and Fitzers, who do the catering for the Curragh, have been very accommodating as well in helping produce this menu. So I'm sure it'll be a great day. Everybody's promised to provide lots of samples. So whatever about it, you'll be able to taste a lot of different foods. So yeah, we're looking forward to it. We have a great county for producing food, and we're working with the local enterprise board with Flavours of Kildare in inviting those startup companies to attend as well.
Oh, yum. I love a food sample now, because, you know, I like to try lots of different things, and then sometimes you get too full if you have the whole thing.
So I know. Well, I hope you'll be there. I think you are broadcasting from live on the day, so we hope to see your team there as well.
Absolutely. Well, Áine, we're looking forward to it. Thank you for joining me, of course, this afternoon. That's the Chief Executive of Into Kildare, Áine Mangan. And this fabulous food festival is taking place at the Curragh Racecourse. That is on the 24th and 25th. If you want to get tickets for it, as Áine did say, tasteofkildare.ie. That's where you can go to find out more information. And one of our texters here, 0833 97 97 97, says it's great to hear about Kildare Readers Festival and the Taste of Kildare on your programme this afternoon. Thought I was aware of events going on locally, but hadn't heard of either of them until now. And that is what I want to bring you, texter. I want to bring you the information so you hear about everything you possibly can happening in this great county, as they say.